Hello, you're listening to me, Liz Earle, with Wellness with Liz Earle, the 10th and final episode in series 1 of my audio wellbeing magazine, where we take a closer look at all things wellbeing. And today I am really so very pleased and slightly overexcited to be going behind the label with one of our best loved wellbeing food brands, Rood Health, with Camilla Barnard, the co-founder and leading lady of one of our leading healthy food brands, to tell us about her journey, the facts behind the latest food fads, and what we should really be looking for when we read the label and decide what exactly ends up in our shopping basket. So welcome, Camilla.
Thank you.
I was so interested to see your products grow and to hear of your journey, because I think, did you start when you were looking for food for your own children? Is that the motivation?
More or less. It was, I wasn't working because I just had my second child, so one 18 months, one baby. And I think that was what made me start thinking about doing something new. And I'd always been, I was going to say interested in food, but food is like my big love.
Yes.
And I met my husband in a restaurant. So looking back on it, it feels as though it was almost inevitable. Didn't seem like it at the time. And I've always, food for me has always been hugely enjoyable and hugely social. So it was driven by an interest in nourishing food, which is probably the perspective of having children, when it really makes you focus on nourishment, you know, in a small body.
Yeah, feeding little people.
Exactly. But, you know, with the enjoyment, and at the time, this was 11 or 12 years ago now, there was a real split between food that was considered sort of nourishing, healthy, and food that you ate because you liked it. And that just seemed madness to me, because you should always enjoy what you eat. But that shouldn't mean that it's some appalling, you know, toxic junk food.
Well, I remember, I think I first came across your early muesli, the Rood Health muesli, because my husband, who is definitely not a food faddy person at all, just said, this stuff tastes great and we just need to find it. And that was sort of in the early days. And then he realised, oh, and it's low sugar and it's
exactly,
really
it should be
healthy.
Yes, that's the perfect journey. You enjoy it. Oh, great. And it's hasn't got anything in it that it shouldn't
have. So was that muesli, was that the first product that
it
you
was.
Did?
It was. The ultimate muesli was the first one that we mixed at the kitchen table.
Did you really?
The typical startup story with 23 ingredients, which we soon realised why nobody else did 23 ingredients. But we still do. It still sells really well. It was just about having a, you know, exciting mouthful, not just having a few different things, but having, it could be different.
So how did you make it healthier then?
More of better range of ingredients, I suppose. Rather, we didn't go for the basic, cheap, simple mix. We went for what would we like in it. So it's got blueberries. It had gojis, which were at the time
very exciting
and different. Yep. Lots of nuts, different nuts. It was three different types of nuts.
And nuts are expensive.
Nuts are really
expensive. Manufacturer, yeah.
Absolutely. And then even the grains, we didn't just do oats. It still has barley, rye, quinoa. So it just the variety, which I think even if you don't consciously recognize when you're eating, I think your palate just gets more satisfaction from
well, and also I know from, I've been immersed in gut health
in
the last sort of 18 months and you know, one of the key things to having a healthier microbiome and a healthier gut is variety.
So true.
And you know, if you can get 18 ingredients in one bowl for breakfast, oh my goodness,
your
gut bacteria going hooray. That's fantastic. So did you make a conscious decision to be low sugar or sugar free? How did that happen?
That was an interesting one. It wasn't, we've never been very rule based, so it's not been hugely sort of sugar free, but it was always, we've always felt strongly that it's a treat. So, you know, sweet food is a treat. And I grew up with, you know, we had sweets at the weekend.
Not every day.
And actually looked forward to them all the more for it. It was, and when we had them, we had them. You know, when my mother made puddings, you got apple pie and custard and you know, had a big slice and it was really good, and there was never any guilt, but you didn't have it 7 days a week. Well, partly because she wasn't going to make apple pie and custard 7 days a week. So I think our attitude was, we're making food which doesn't come into the pudding category. It's you know, it was breakfast initially, so it really shouldn't, that's not what you should be getting your sugar from. And the idea of claiming at the time was, lots of mueslis were saying 50% fruit, and that's just way too much fruit.
Yeah,
it's
a lot of sugar. It's a dried lot of fruits, sugar. We forget,
really
are very, very
high
in sugar.
So it was, for us, it was just, that should not be what's making you go back and eat it. It shouldn't be about that. You should be enjoying it from a much more, you know, long-term genuine nourishment perspective.
Mm. So moving on, you met Nick in a restaurant.
Yep.
You got married.
We got married.
You met when you met him. He was an acrobatic stunt pilot.
Yes, is this right?
Does he still fly a plane?
Likely. He's still like, yep, he does. So he does formation aerobatics, and now he flies for the Breitling Wingwalkers.
Wow.
So he has the ladies on the wing doing. They do the acrobatics. He flies the plane.
So that's quite a good combination. I mean, you've got to be in good health and fine fettle, haven't you? You've got to have all your mental facilities working properly and your coordination.
And be slightly mad.
Which I think reflects in your brand, because you're, you know, you are quite quirky, you are different. What followed on from the Muesli then? Did you then think, well, this is going to fly, what else can we do?
We've always been driven, rather than being driven by what's selling well, we're actually driven by what we're getting excited by or what's come next. Mm. So the Muesli naturally led into porridge, partly because we found that certain oats, I mean, you think all oats are the same, you can't buy different varieties, but some of them cook very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd got a batch which were useless for muesli, but they made great porridge. Got us into porridge.
Okay.
We then got into sort of light cereals when I was eating a flaked cereal that I'd bought, you know, a typical cereal flake. And I was, as you do with a cereal packet, it sits on the table and I was reading it and I was looking at the salt content thinking, I must be reading that wrong. That must be per pack.
Right, not per bowl.
Yes, exactly. And it was, and I'd worked out and it was per bowl. And I was just stunned by how much salt was in it that I didn't know I was eating. I'm not anti-salt. We need salt.
Yes.
You know, salt is actually crucially important. But I wasn't expecting to have a lot of it
that
in
much.
My breakfast cereal. Yeah. So I felt slightly conned. It was that sense of that wasn't where I thought I was going to get it from.
Mm-hmm.
So then we made totally plain, well, our sort of solution to that was the spelt flakes, which are literally the ingredient is spelt. It's 100% spelt. There's nothing else in it. So they are a much simpler flavour. But you know, you can add your own maple syrup or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what you're adding. So that was got us into... Then it was the full range of cereals.
And then did the milks follow on from that? Because you're known really
yet.
For your almond milks.
We are now, we are. And do you know what? That wasn't even... We had no idea we were going to do that
really?
At the time. So having
love that when new businesses, entrepreneurs go, yeah, but then I just did this
and
it works and then it becomes your bestseller.
And you never know. You never know what's going to do well and what's not. Well, we don't. So now after the cereals, it was actually snacks. We did the really thin sort of rice cakes, rice crackers, which were much bitier and snappier, not polystyrene. Tile,
yes,
kind of actually nice.
And again, was that your family, your young family? Were you thinking, what do I want to give my kids?
Yeah, exactly. It was you've had breakfast. What's next?
Yes.
And grain based again, because I do love a good grain. So it seemed like a natural follow on. It was a savoury, you know, simple snack.
And again, keeping the salt out,
or keeping it really low, and certainly no sugar or anything.
Yeah,
and they're just sort of. Bake pressed. It's a very weird process. It's like a sort of controlled popping that makes them. And then we did the oat cakes, which again, that was about not using palm oil and not using wheat flour, because it's the wheat flour that makes oat cakes stick to the roof of your mouth.
Oh, is it?
So we use oatmeal and then olive oil. It just makes them bitier, crisper,
interesting,
nicer.
So you're using olive oil. Can you substitute palm oil with olive oil? Is it just more expensive
not
to do that?
Not always.
How does that work?
But you can with that particular recipe. I mean, what we found is when we're trying to make something, it's really the relationship with the people who make our food for us is so important. Because
So it's not your kitchen table anymore?
Not the kitchen table anymore. No, that would have to be
a little bit bigger.
Kitchen. But it's enormous because they have, you know, you're trying to get people to do something that they don't normally do. And usually nobody's asked the question before.
Do you know, I so know that journey.
Yeah.
There are so many parallels there. And I was thinking when I was hearing your story and reading about it before the interview, I started my first book because I was pregnant with Lily.
Right.
And, you know, who's now 26, so that's a long, long time ago, because I was aware that as I was pregnant, I was feeding a new growing person.
Yeah.
And I then had a renewed interest in looking at food labels and what I was putting into my supermarket trolley. So that was, it came genuinely from that. And then I started writing about baby food and toddler food with babies and toddlers, because I was right in that.
You're living it.
And then setting up the beauty company, again, to your point, asking those questions that had never been asked before.
No.
And asking manufacturers to make things in a way that they'd never been asked.
Well, you're not
because
going
the big
with
industry
cost is the big principle.
No,
you're not
absolutely.
Saying make it as cheap as possible.
Well, that's I'm so interested that you say that. I remember when I was working on a fragrance and the perfumers kept saying, well, what's the budget? And we said, well, There is no budget. You make the great fragrance and we'll work out how we can afford it.
Yeah, and maybe we can't. But maybe let's start by making the great fragrance.
Start by making a great product. Yeah. And I think that's how you build a great brand. Because
but it is interesting
cost isn't
that that's
first.
Not often how people are
I'm fascinated
up.
To hear that that is the same parallel in the food industry.
Interesting, really interesting.
So where do you make now? Where are most of your things made?
Well, we try and make them where they sort of grow best, which sounds a bit mad, but Italy is a big producer for us. So you're talking about the almond milk, so... Italy has great nuts, not just great nuts, man. Not just almonds, but they've got fantastic hazelnuts.
Well, that's Nutella and
exactly,
all of that.
Exactly, there's
Italy.
A reason it's all there. Yeah. So the almond milks, or all the nut milks, are made in Italy, where they were using their spring water, their nuts. So it makes complete sense, and they know how to deal with them. They've got the relationships with the farmers.
Yes. Everything's very fresh.
Everything's very fresh, and then it actually doesn't travel very far. It's all made in Italy, and then it only has to come to the UK. So in fact, more. Makes a lot more sense than making it in the UK.
Yes.
Oat cakes are made in Scotland.
Right, where the oats come
from.
Right,
exactly, and where they know how to make oat cakes. So we'll go wherever it makes sense to go. And the hardest thing is finding people who, like exactly as you were saying, you know, will slightly change the way they do things.
Because it's been done like this for years.
Exactly,
this is how we do it.
Exactly. Because the latest
But it gets easier, doesn't it?
It
now,
does.
But now you're a bigger proven brand.
Exactly.
People
they're not
will
taking
be willing
a punt
to trust
on
you.
Us so much, which at the beginning, you know, our early partners, we have to be really grateful to. Because it could have been a total waste of their time.
Yep.
You know, they gave us that chance. So we are more reliable now.
But it's very interesting that people think about local sourcing and sustainability as being local to them. But actually, in the bigger picture, it's local to where the food is being produced. That's what's truly local.
I think that's really true. And I think that's a really good point. It's very difficult to communicate because what do you say? Local to the nuts. It doesn't make any sense.
You can't have a local muesli, can you? Because all the nuts are coming in from Brazil or somewhere.
Nuts, fruit seeds. Well, they'll be from all over. Probably from Turkey, Brazil, various parts of Europe. Only the oats are going to be from the UK,
right?
And possibly the barley. That would be it.
Okay,
it's really. Yeah.
So I know you then went into the milks. Is that right?
Yeah,
so
from 4 years ago.
Okay, because that whole growth sector of almond milk, and you know, we saw. I remember my eldest boy is actually lactose intolerant, and he grew up on rice milk. That was sort of the only thing really that was available.
Choice.
Rice dream. You know, now we've got oat milk and almond milk and all sorts of other coconut milk. And I want to talk to you about different things here. I think firstly, I'd love to know more in depth about the almonds and the milk because I've read a lot about. There's a lot of controversy over nut milks, but also fundamentally, I was interested to see that you are not anti-dairy. Even though you're such a big seller of the nut milk.
Absolutely.
So why are you also pro-dairy?
Do you know, it's a really interesting question, that one. It's my favourite question.
Oh, good.
because when you think about it, it's very interesting that the whole nut milk world has grown up and has got this perception as being anti-dairy.
You know, either or.
There's a complete assumption that it's either or. And actually, when you think about it, why on earth?
Yeah,
is
I mean,
it
I
either
have both.
Or? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it has. It's become an either-or world, and it's demonising dairy. We're about quality overall. We love milk, but we want good quality milk. And I think what's hugely sad is our choice of dairy milk is terrible.
Oh, my goodness.
Absolutely
you are singing
terrible.
My song.
It's
I mean,
so bad.
I've done a whole film on YouTube, which is called The Movie. It's about cows on grass.
Yes.
We've got some great guests coming up, actually, in future episodes, talking about grass-fed dairy and pasture-fed milk.
Yep.
And we, for all sorts of reasons, I know I'm probably preaching to the converted here, you know, we need animals on the land to fertilise the land and keep it nutritious.
Even if you choose not to eat the...
output. Absolutely. No, I mean having the milk is and it's such a good form of absorbable calcium for growing teens and bone density and all of that. So that's a whole other topic. But I'm interested to see your perspective on it. So do you
For us it's quality, and what we're really trying hard to communicate, and we go out of our way to do this, because we've got a lot of dairy free customers, is we really want to say we feel it's about quality. You can have quality dairy, which, as you say, is about part. It's about not just choosing red, green or blue top or whatever it is. It's not just... Don't buy on price. Has it eaten grass? You know, what kind of cow is it? Can you get something local?
Sure.
Can you get single... You know, we've got single estate coffee.
Oh, my goodness. I wish. You know, I love Ayrshire milk from Ayrshire cows.
Exactly.
But, you know,
can you get that easily?
It's really hard.
Really hard.
Yeah.
So we would love the whole... I would like to to see what's happened in the dairy-free world, which is it's got hugely sophisticated. There's a lot of choice in terms of taste, variety, quality. People ask questions about almonds and where they come from, and people will pay more. Mm. And I would love to see that applied to dairy while we've still got some dairy farmers.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because if we shortly won't have any left.
No, and we should be brilliant at dairy farming in this
country. Our land is perfect for it. That's definitely a topic that I'm sure we'll be returning to again and again. But on the subject of almond milk.
Yes.
I've seen a lot online, two things, I think. One is about the sustainability of the growing of the almonds and where they come from. And then secondly, about what to look for when you're buying almond milk.
Yes.
So what's your view on where it should come from? And I've seen, you know, all sorts about the rise in veganism and the people drinking more almond milk is such bad news for the bees in California.
Yep.
You know, what's the story there? What's the reality?
I think, the California situation is not good. Is it now classified a desert? They've had so much drought, but because of the way farming is done there so intensively, I don't think it's going to change. So it is a bit of a disaster, California. Our almonds are from mainly from Sicily, always from Italy, which has grown them traditionally, and it's part of it. It fits within everything else they grow. So it's not
a monoculture.
It's not a monoculture, and it's not changing what they've always grown. And you're not shipping in bees for the season and feeding them glucose fructose syrup.
Yes.
You don't even want to think about.
The whole other story. We're going to be covering honey and the glucose fructose intensive harvesting of bees and honey.
But these things are it's such a challenge, isn't it? Because you want to eat the right food yourself that nourishes you. But then as a consumer, which, you know, we all are as well as producers, there's so much behind it. There's so much backstory. So
how did you make your almond milk and why is it different?
We started making it 4 years ago, and at the time what really stunned us was people were choosing dairy-free milks either as an intolerance, so they had no choice, or they were beginning to choose them as a healthy option. And we were stunned by the ingredients lists in these supposedly healthy options. And almost everything on the market then had lists of things in that I didn't even know what they were. You know, calcium carbonate, gallon gum, guar gum, carrageenan, and just not stuff that I recognised as food, and I didn't understand why it needed to be in
a milk.
And the other thing was they mostly didn't taste very nice, which so I felt it was really not it wasn't it didn't really feel like they were serving anyone brilliantly. So we were looking around to see if there was a way we could do it better, knowing that at home you don't need that many ingredients.
No, I mean, how do you make almond milk at home?
I tend to make oat milk, actually.
Oh, do you?
Because I like the creaminess of oat milk.
Interesting. Yeah. I've not tried that. Is it just oats and water?
Yeah, basically oats and water. And it's because oats are relatively high fat content as a grain.
Yes.
I find it's closest to dairy because I like dairy. So oats for me is the nearest one. It's creamier.
Interesting. You know, all these things we've probably got in our kitchen cupboards.
Yeah.
And then we don't think, you know, if I ran out of milk, I wouldn't think, oh, I've got some porridge.
Yes.
That's fine.
Yes.
You know, I can still,
make
make something or, you know, even bake with it or
and
other
slightly
things.
Slightly less waste as well, because I find one of the difficult things with almond milk is how much almond you get left over.
Right. And what can you do with the leftover? Can you make nut butter or something with it?
You can't really make nut butter. It's a bit dry. You can make cheesecake base, but how many cheesecakes you
Okay,
get?
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of cheesecake.
How many cheesecakes? I mean, if you were really organised about it, you could probably freeze it. And there is stuff you can do with it.
Right. Add it to protein balls, maybe.
Yes, you probably can.
And actually, maybe animals would like it.
Yep.
You know, because it'd be high in protein.
Yep.
It's a good
mix
it in with.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's really interesting. So you make it. I mean, would you say that you can make almond milk at home? I mean, that's a fresh milk.
Yeah.
So why don't you make yours in a fresh way?
The ideal with anything, I'd say, is to make it at home. It's always going to be. You choose the ingredients, it's fresh, it's perfect.
But we don't all have time.
We don't all have time.
No
not
way.
To do everything. There are the things that you do. You know, I always make my stock, always.
Right.
But, you know, there are other things which life feels too short, whether that's stuffing a mushroom or making almond milk. Make your own, ideally. And otherwise, for me, the important things are that it doesn't contain things that I don't have in my kitchen, just as you were saying. And that's our principle as a business, is that you should be able to read the label and know exactly what everything is. That the same you might have it in the kitchen.
Come out of your cupboard.
And you can make your own, you're then, you can make your own decisions. If it's got a list of stuff you don't recognise, then what's it there for?
Mm-hmm.
And why?
Yes.
And I just feel, actually, there's no excuse. Usually you don't, you just don't need it. It'll be to bulk it out or to make it sweeter or to make it behave like something else. And we'd rather say, well, no, let's actually just have it the way it is. So,
and shelf life, I mean, how do you keep things fresh?
Because obviously heat, the you have to issue heat treat them. Yeah, and nuts are quite volatile, so you have to heat treat them to give them the shelf life. They're, nuts are a funny one. You can't,
you've got to be careful.
You do. You can't treat them the same way that you treat juice. You need the sort of the vitamin. Juice is much easier to do as a fresh food. Nuts.
What makes
tricky.
Nuts more difficult?
They contain a toxin which, if you're making it at home, it's fine. But I think if you're trying to make it last for a few weeks rather than a few days, it's just volatile.
And nut toxins are
very
toxic.
Yes, you're not just going to be on the loo for a bit. You could be in big trouble.
Yeah.
So
the safety is obviously paramount.
Safety is paramount.
It's a little,
yeah.
There are so many parallels, I think, with the beauty industry, because to keep beauty products safe, you need to have preservatives.
Right. Yeah.
And, there is that always. Yes, of course, you can make your own at home. And I've got, loads of recipes on the website for making scrubs and lotions and things. But I always say this will last a few days and you need to keep it in the fridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not going to behave in the same way as something that,
it'll
you buy.
No, it'll probably go mouldy or something. Yeah. Because it's live.
And, you're putting it around your eyes or your mouth. But obviously, when you're actually eating something or drinking something and
it's
giving
really
it
similar,
to
similar. Really similar. You've to got children. To be confident that it's fine. Oh, interesting, on the children's point.
Mm.
I know that some people are giving their children dairy-free drinks. And, once they're weaned and it's just a small part of their diet, that's absolutely fine. But as a milk replacement in a very young child, I think it's really important to remember that dairy milk, animal milk, is an extraordinary substance. It is incredibly nutritious. It is designed to be a total food for a young being.
Yeah.
Nut milks are not that. They are a completely different thing. They're the same colour and the same consistency, and you use them in the same way. But the mistake is in thinking of them as nutritionally the same thing. They're not. Yeah. They're nuts and water and whatever else.
Well, it was interesting.
Them.
We had Deborah Carr here a few weeks ago talking about kefir.
Yes.
And she has that great kefir brand, which I really like too, called Nourish Kefir. And yes, you can buy coconut milk kefir and the nut milk kefirs, but she was saying it doesn't work in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have the animal protein in the kefir.
Oh, that's interesting.
So whether you're using cow's milk, or if you are intolerant, then you could go for a goat's milk or sheep's milk.
Yeah.
But again, I was listening to a professor podcasting recently talking about, again, the microbiome and going back into gut health, and saying that the kefir that is made with these animal proteins lasts, it survives the extreme stomach acid, and it gets further into the deep intestine. So it's just, it's really knowing the full picture, isn't it?
And in a way we can't, which is why we need to trust. If we are buying food, you need to be able to trust who you're buying it from. And they've looked at the whole picture and done some of the work for you, because it is just goes on and on. It goes on and on, whether you're trying to work out where the almonds have come from, whether the bees have been harmed, or which bit of the gut you're looking at. It's fascinating, and it's what keeps me interested. 11 years later, still learning. Still,
and it's so great that
out.
We as consumers have food pioneers like you who are prepared to do all that investigative work and put your life and limb on the line, really, to create these amazing products.
And the same in the beauty, because of course all my energy goes into the food side, so I have to totally trust somebody else on the on the beauty side.
I think it is about trusted brands, isn't it? I think it's now that we're getting more awareness of things, and that's what I love about podcasting, is that we can bring these topics to life. We can really talk about them. It's not just a pretty video or a vlog or whatever. It's actually getting in-depth behind the scenes with educated and informed content and experts like you. So what's next for you? What's the next part of the journey?
Oh, we never quite know what's next. Things tend to come slightly
out of the blue. Do you
follow
trends or fads, or do things present themselves to you?
Because we're also, I bet it's the same for you, because we're all so into food and we're all living and breathing food as well as eating it, that it tends to come from within us rather than sort of following a trend. It'll be we'll find ourselves bringing things into the office or doing things. So at the moment in the office, we're brewing kombucha and making kefir.
Excellent.
And, you know, it's all sort of happens in
of course,
inside. And
of
then,
course it is.
So there's always a lot of different things in development.
As you can see, walking through the studios this morning,
yes,
there's all sorts of stuff happening
exactly.
in the kitchen.
Oh, it was
that
fascinating.
We're working on.
Yes, I got a nice snack.
Excellent.
Great.
Oh, we like to treat our guests
so
well.
Very similar in our office. So there's lots of new foods. But you never quite know what the next thing is. And last year we opened a cafe, which was on no business plan ever. But hugely exciting.
Move.
And it was, yeah. But it seemed so natural. It was just when we were moving offices, we'd seen an office we liked, but we thought was slightly too big and realised that actually the space...
You
it was a dream
it.
Space for a cafe. Yeah. And although nobody had ever thought we would do that, the minute we thought about it, it just felt absolutely right.
Yeah.
So we just did it. So that was a slightly random tangent, but so much fun because then we can make the foods that we can't put into the packets.
Yeah.
We can do it all. We can actually put it on the table in front of people.
And maybe even
test
on your customers.
Exactly. And we've got somewhere to go for lunch.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Camilla, it's just been so great to chat.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you so much for coming in. And as usual, we will put all the notes and resources on the podcast notes so that everybody will know where to come and find you for more info.
Oh, super. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is it for today, and for a little while, actually, as we take a very short break for the summer. I'll be back again for the start of Series 2 with many more fascinating and equally informative guests, all of whom are both inspirational and knowledgeable leaders in their field, full of the most incredible knowledge and well-being wisdom to share with us here. If you're tuning in for the very first time, then you might like to know that there's a whole other 9 episodes of Wellness with Lizelle that you can enjoy. So do download and take a listen. And please join in the chat. Leave me a comment on what you think and what you'd like to hear more of in the future. You'll find me on Facebook at Lizelle Wellbeing Magazine and also on Instagram and Twitter. And my personal accounts there are just called Lizelle Me. I really hope you've loved this very first series as much as my wellbeing team and I have all enjoyed putting it together. Do subscribe so you'll get the notification of when we're back on air. And of course, we always so appreciate it when you leave us a review to help spread the spoken word. As I mentioned earlier, we do produce a set of podcast notes from each episode. And to get these, you simply have to head over to lizellewellbeing.com and sign up there for the free weekly newsletter, which will not only bring you these notes, but also a bit more wellbeing news, some new recipes, offers, ticket events, and a whole lot more. And you'll find a series of video clips, which I film here at my wellbeing studios. And these are also free to download and view. You simply have to go to lizellewellbeing.com and search Watch Liz. And you'll find the whole library of these on YouTube, on the Lizelle Wellbeing Productions channel, which, of course, you can also subscribe to. But that is it for now. I shall look forward very much to being in your ear again soon. Until then, thank you for tuning in. Go well. Bye-bye. Thank you.